from the unexplained to the mundane. Join us on our journey to the fringe. Hello and welcome to Journey to the Fringe, where we shine lights on fringe topics. And Chelsea, one thing we really need to address.
Yeah.
We either need to acknowledge that ghost hunters are out there trying to kill ghosts, or they need a better name. It's just, it's that simple. Shit.
Do you think that's why they never appear to ghost hunters?
I'm just worried they've been killing them this whole time.
Wow, my mind is blown. I think you're right.
Yeah.
Ghost finders.
Yeah. Ghost finders, ghost spotters. I mean, we have bird watchers. You can have ghost watchers, but like ghost hunters, it's very clear what you're trying to do. And we need a better name if that's not what you're trying to do.
Holy shit. Wow. Anyway,
we are your podcast hosts, Taylor and Chelsea, who cannot stew on this. You need to move on because we have a different episode about to move on to. Here today, doing another Halloween episode. And that means a creature feature. And I think
it's Halloween month.
Yeah.
I got my spooky Halloween skull right here to remind me of what I'm doing right
to
now.
Keep you humble.
Exactly. Keep me on task. Halloween
go to your head.
Yeah. Right. I'm recording a Halloween episode. I only have one cryptid today. This story is the story of the Deer Man. Specifically of Central Alberta. We're going back to our roots here.
I did not know about this guy.
Yeah, well, you're about to learn something more.
I was just working alongside Jack growing up.
Yeah, this might be him.
Okay.
Throughout 2019, an anonymous cryptozoologist from Central Alberta documented a string of alleged deer man encounters on his blog, albertadeerman.com.blog. All of which are supposed to have taken place in rural communities across the Canadian prairies throughout 2018. Why you would do research like this and remain anonymous? No idea. But this guy is from Alberta, so, you know, intentions could be blurry. All this guy has on his website is blog entries of encounters. Not sure where he got them because all the eyewitnesses are unnamed, claiming that all of them requested that their names be withheld for fear of ridicule. And he doesn't seem to do much more than a handful of those blog entries. I did a quick search and there have been deer man sightings also in Ohio, Oklahoma, and Delaware. So if we have another episode, let's do that. This one's going to be a little bit of a funner episode. So without further ado, here's the first sighting of the Alberta Deer Man. Now, this report isn't based on the experience of a single person, but instead a husband and wife. A church-going couple who are retired and who both work for the county of Lacombe and both couldn't believe what they had seen. As they always did on that day, they ate together, had coffee, and decided to drive through the country, a tradition they kept for the latter part of 20 years. On that fateful morning, the two drove through the fog and turned off the main Highway 50 and decided it would be a nice change if they drove down Range Road 225, a decision that would soon lead to a sighting that would never be forgotten. While they drove slowly through the fog, they both claimed they saw something moving in and out of the fog with such great speed that it couldn't have been a man. While they continued to drive, they could swear it looked like a deer, but it was too large to be a deer. Not wanting to scare the unknown skittish animal, the husband slowed to a stop and waited for a moment or two, in the hopes of having it run away, in the hopes of not hitting it. Slowly, the husband began driving again and was forced to slam on the brakes as standing just a few feet in front of them was the deer man. It stood perfectly still and slowly stood up on its hind legs and is said to have towered over their car. Without a second thought, the husband slammed on the horn and stepped on the gas. The fear took hold of him just before his car was to make contact with the deer man and it bolted into the fields covered by the thick fog. The couple had no idea what they saw and didn't stop until they reached their home and ran inside. Encounter number two. This encounter is shared by a retired librarian whose name has been held back for fear of ridicule. It was early in the morning and she was making coffee and breakfast. She glanced out her window as the coffee was brewing Standing just a few yards away was the deer man. She recalled that it stood perfectly still like a statue and their eyes locked and neither one of them blinked. And before she knew it, the creature, why didn't she blink?
She was also a deer man. Yeah. She doesn't want to identify herself.
I assume when they say something doesn't blink, it's because it's a paranormal virgin. Like, I don't understand when she's not blinking.
Just take her, like, staring contest very seriously.
Yeah, maybe she's entranced. And before she, yeah, maybe she's a trained staring artist.
Staring contest enthusiast.
Staring yes. contest. Why is that suddenly a tongue twister? Before she knew it, the creature slowly made its way to the window. Its non-blinking eyes were almost hypnotic. Maybe it was her eyes.
Could it not have just been a regular deer?
Could have been, but no, this is Deer Man. If you didn't okay. listen to the title of the episode. As this bond was made, I don't know why it's being described as a bond.
That's what's agreed to.
It was quickly cut off as the deer blinked. Just kidding. Fuck this episode.
And it lost, little bitch.
And it turned around and began to make its way back to where it came from. But not before taking a few of the crab apples from her tree. Ever since then, she has continued to wake up at the same time every single day in the hopes of catching a glimpse of what she said was the most majestic animal she's ever seen. What the fuck is the story?
I can't really tell if you're laughing and what you're not at this point.
This is a serious story.
Okay.
She never felt fear like the others who've reported their encounters with the deer man. Oh, she wasn't scared of the deer man. It could have been a regular deer, don't you think, if it was stealing crab apples? And she wasn't scared.
There's nothing in the story that would say a deer couldn't do that.
Yeah, nope. I'm not gonna lie. The writing on this blog was absolutely atrocious. It was just so bad. And the stories that I'm telling you had... I had to make many changes to them to make them at least readable. However, I'm only one person and it was so bad. I can't even...
I just need to ask you, the changes you made, were they to make it readable or more deer-like?
The crab apple was mine. Just kidding. Did you like it?
It's beautiful.
If you liked it, I put it in there. No, it was to make it more readable. There were words in there that made it completely illegible.
She was a librarian.
I'll get to my thoughts at the end of this, but...
Okay. I just usually think of librarians as people who have a good handle on the language.
Yeah, I don't know necessarily that it was actual people's encounters more than someone just... They were all written in the same style, to be honest with you. They were all horrible. They all had redundant sentences all over the place. It was pretty bad. And I'd like to point out at this point, we still have no description of the actual deer man. I'm not sure if that's...
But yeah. I never know whether or not I should, or if I just missed it because I wasn't paying attention for like a 2-minute window.
Yeah, I'd prefer not to take any blame for that. I'd like to put it squarely on the blog poster's shoulders.
Is it the blog person's shoulders, or is it just the fact that we assume we know what a deer man looks like?
Yeah, here's the thing. I thought this would be a fun one to share because I don't know that I would take this one too serious, but I felt like I should still cover it. And it's this deer man of Central Alberta, so I couldn't not cover this, and it deserves a Halloween-y episode, I thought. Yeah. Yeah, so story number 3 is The Farmer and the Deer Man. This report takes place smack dab right in Highway 53, west of Donalda. And it deals with a farmer and his livestock. If you are the faint of heart, I suggest you understand that in the world of the living, life is born and taken away. With that being said, a farmer was awoken one night to the sound of his pig screaming with fear. This woke him up and caused him to run outside in his underwear. Brandishing a rifle, he scanned the area and found that all his pigs were accounted for. And this checks out because it is Alberta. I can't tell you how many times I saw someone running with a rifle in their underwear.
And it's just habit. You got to go check your pigs.
Yeah, exactly. My pigs, they yell.
Is there a chance then that the German wears underwear?
I don't see why not. Yeah. I mean, we don't have a description of him, so your guess is as good as mine here. Not knowing just what spooked the pigs, he fired two rounds into the air in the hopes of scaring what he only assumed was a coyote or perhaps another vastly larger predator. But on that night, he was called yet again.
Vastly larger predator in central Alberta?
Yeah, deer man.
Yeah, it's either coyote or deer man.
Yeah. You never heard that?
Yeah.
It's either coyote or deer man or one-eyed Jack.
Which is deer man, more or less.
Yeah, he's pretty much deer man, now that I think of it. So that one night, he was called yet again to check on his cows this time, who were crying out in the night. The farmer didn't know what to make of it and quickly got his son and ran towards the barn. The cows were clearly spooked and were stomping their hooves and shrieking. Sorry, I don't know why they're shrieking. Like someone was there or something.
As people who farmed cows, that's not how cows act.
Even if someone was there or something, they don't shriek or stomp their hooves.
They have slightly different moves depending on the circumstances, but none's ever considered a shriek.
I would say that a pig would shriek before a cow would, but even then, a pig would squeal.
Yeah, and a cow would squeal even before it would shriek.
It's true, in my mind. He already crossed off a coyote, as it would have ran away by now and everything looked clear.
Coyotes don't wear underwear.
Nope. He was about to leave the barn. That was until he heard the floor creak above him in the hayloft. That's when he realized that whatever it was hiding up above. He said he initially thought it could be kids, perhaps wanting to tip a cow or try to rob him. Before he could say a single word.
The two options. Yeah. This is rural Alberta.
Yeah, lots of kids robbing people out there.
Or tipping cows. And those are the only two things they're doing.
Before he could say a single word, a noise that filled him with fear echoed through the barn, driving his animals into a frenzy. Before he could do anything, the mysterious figure jumped down and bolted through the night. This wasn't the end, as he fired another shot and this time almost hit the deer man. It's a deer man now.
When he shot at it.
Yeah, it's now a deer man. It was too late and the creature vanished into the night. The animals were all unharmed and were on edge for the rest of the night. After a few days, the dust settled down and life returned to normal for the most part. But now he sleeps with one eye open and his rifle loaded next to his bed. I wonder if he sleeps with actual clothes on so he doesn't have to run outside in his underwear anymore. Okay. I got another one. Sighting 4. This is in William Canyon Trail in Dinalda. Again, founded in 1911, Dinalda is a village located in central Alberta. I don't know why I didn't start with this one. And is known for having the largest lamp in the world. That's totally an Alberta thing. Yeah. They got a lot of large things. While an elderly woman whose name she didn't want to reveal out of fear of public scrutiny recalled her sighting of the elusive deer man. As she was committed to doing her daily hike routine in order to stay fit and active, she was alone and just thought that day would be like any other. She recalled that she heard nothing but silence, a common trait when about to witness the deer man. She was taken aback by this, as she usually heard birds or other hikers in the area, but not today. Yeah. She stopped and was feeling a sense of dread. Soon she heard the sound of a twig snapping. As she turned around, she came face to face with the deer man, who stood before her like that of a statue.
I just need to, at this point, is this her sighting or is this her romantic novel rendition of it?
Yeah, I'm going to go back again. It's probably the blog writer's romantic deer man novel.
Because I am now picturing this as like a 7-part series, Deer Man, the Untamable. Romantic novels.
Yeah,
that you can buy on Amazon.
If you will notice, the writing style is much the same for every single sighting.
Yeah.
And there's not much eyewitness about it, I would say.
Donalda is in the middle of nowhere, Alberta.
I did look at that, actually.
Of Lacombe, yeah. Just above Stettler.
Yeah, you didn't mention the big lamp, though.
No, I did not mention the big lamp, for I have not seen the big lamp.
It's not middle of nowhere, there's a big lamp.
Yeah, biggest city is either Red Deer, which is pretty big, or Camrose.
Yes. Oh, it's over there.
Equal parts between.
Okay, so let's remember that she just turned around, she heard a twig snap, could have been her stepping on a twig, that was not clarified for us at this point. Turns around, deer man's there. The feeling of terror washed over her and she didn't move an inch. The deer man took a step towards her and towards a clear few feet taller than her. That sentence didn't even make sense. It attempted to communicate, she recalled, as if it was trying to talk, but all it could mutter was that of what a deer makes while warning others.
Hmm.
What? Have you ever heard a deer warn you of something? What does it say? He's saying it like we should know.
Mm. I don't know. I really don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. The day was cool and damp, though. This was completely naked like a wild man.
Okay, yeah, this is the romantic novel version. She just alludes to that there's dick flopping out, like, everywhere.
It didn't show any effects of said weather, not a shiver or a tremble. It reached out with his hand in an attempt to touch it.
It was his hand.
Before I could, in the distance, a conversation could be heard between two other hikers and a dog that was barking like it was rabid. The next thing she knew, the deer man bolted from the scene. Just what it was about to do is up for debate. But one thing for sure is, if this creature was attempting to communicate with a person, where was it about to prey on its next victim? No one can say for sure, but its fear of being spotted by people wasn't an issue before, until the sound of a dog. Is this creature afraid of our four-legged companions? Or did it fear retaliation if it decided to be hostile in search of food? After the event took place, she decided to run towards the others and warn them of what she had witnessed. Not knowing exactly what she was talking about, they believed she saw something truly terrifying. As they left her, they had to restrain their dog as it began going crazy, attempting to break itself free from its owners and run to the unknown. Okay, I have one last one. The sighting comes in from a 17-year-old kid traveling to see his friends on a Friday night on May long weekend. Usually these details, he was cruising around and exploring the countryside, but on this day he got lost driving down Rage Road 174. It's such vague details with all of a sudden a very specific detail.
Yeah.
And decided to pull off the road and turned off to the Crop Production Services Road. As he was driving way below the speed limit in an attempt to find his way back, he coasted until he came to a complete stop at the site that befell him. Was one of monstrous. The very thought of a half man, half deer on all fours standing perfectly still. Well, there's one thing we found out about deer man so far, and that is that he stands perfectly still. That's about the only thing that we can put together from all of these.
His dick is swaying. We can't get that from one story.
Especially from the last one. He was definitely naked. The strange creature was attempting to cross the road, but stood perfectly still like a statue. What? It was attempting to cross the road, but it stood perfectly still.
Perfectly deer-like.
Oh my god. That is perfectly deer-like, actually. They freeze.
Oh, someone is here. I must freeze.
Yeah, right in front of the fast-moving object. Not knowing what to do, he just sat there, his mouth wide open. I don't know if this is the deer or the boy. The stench of musk filled the air, and soon seconds turned into minutes. He was afraid to move even an inch as he thought at any moment that beast could attack him and do God knows what. Thoughts were racing through his head, and his parents not knowing where he was. of him not graduating, not going to prom, and not being able to follow his dreams. The deer man slowly stood up, revealing its true height, and slowly it began to walk towards the car.
It's a romance novel still.
It is. Moving just like that of a deer, very quickly in skittish movements, but very slowly. While the temperature dropped, steam can be seen shooting out of its nose. It silently towards him and began letting out snorts that cut through the air and filled him with fear. Just as the deer man stood a few feet from the driver's side window, the young man began to cry, and without a spare second, he threw the vehicle into drive and sped off. The last of the deer man occupying the same distance as the nameless individual was that he slowly began to run towards the vehicle until it gave up. Through his rearview mirror, he saw it get back on all fours and return into the darkness. Okay. This... I didn't give you all the stories. I'm going to be honest with you. I thought the deer man was a fun thing. And it was the deer man of Central Alberta. And I just, once I started reading this and editing this, I was like, there's no way I can't do this in all of its glory.
It hasn't happened. It does need to be a romantic novel series. It does.
So to me, just my feel of it, and I hate to do this on a Halloween episode, but I also love to do this on a Halloween episode. I feel like Taylor will regain what I lost on this, but I honestly feel like it's a 17, 18 year old who was like, I'm going to start a blog. It's like someone who doesn't really have a working idea of cryptids. I could slap something together much better. And there is an actual deer man out there. Like I listed, there's a bunch in Ohio, Delaware, Oklahoma. It's actually out there. This guy could have given it much more details to make it a little bit more substantial, but he clearly just made it all up. I was really hoping for more.
Or he just accepted stories too.
No, because these are all written in the same exact
narrative. The same person. That doesn't mean that he didn't have other people give him stories and he wrote them.
That's true. He could have got some ideas, but you can tell he made up the details. He wrote the stories. There's no eyewitness. There's no quotes. There's no consensus.
There's not even a description of the creature. We all have to assume that we're all seeing the same thing, and that is a deer head on a human body.
Is that what you get from it?
That's what I'm seeing in my mind.
Yeah.
It's a human body with a deer head.
Yeah. No, that's got to be what it is. Deer man.
Description. Yeah.
Maybe it's a human with deer horns.
Fully deer to the bottom of the neck, and then human all the way down from there.
Yeah.
In all of its genitalia glory.
Yeah. No, I definitely picture it with human genitals. But I like, it's not even like this guy was taking encounters and just did a shitty job relaying them. Like, these are not encounters. They are not at all. He didn't give descriptions or anything. And the funny thing that I found about this is blogs actually link back to this, citing it as a source when they say deer man is a cryptid, because he came up in my research and I was like, oh, he sounds good. And people give vague descriptions and then say that it links back to this guy. Here's the blog. And then these are stories directly from the blog. There's literally, last it was updated was years ago. This guy says, stay tuned. I'm going to give you more stories. He never comes back to it. And yeah, so I was hoping for more. I got too much into the research before. These are highly edited by me and you listen to them. They're not great.
No, and Chelsea is trying to give us the best representation of the stories.
I really did. And I read them so nicely for you. And so when it's not a Halloween episode, because it's a scary time of year, you gotta, like, I don't want to put too much stress on you being too scared. So I needed to lighten it up a little. We'll have another scary episode of the other Deer Man sightings. And we'll do an actual Deer Man episode for you. But without further ado, I think Taylor needs to redeem this episode now. Well, you're welcome.
I think I can, Chelsea, because the next story that you're going to tell comes almost strictly from police reports.
Okay, that's much better. almost the opposite of what I just did.
Yeah. I think this is going to be good because, Chelsea, we're going to be taking a look at the Big Muddy Monster, which I almost seem... Cool. I think he almost sounds like a blues guitarist, but he is not. He is a cryptid in Murfreesboro, Illinois.
Wow. Illinois again, eh?
Yeah, I told you I had a theme.
What's going on in Illinois?
A quiet town nestled along the Big Muddy River. What unfolded over the course of 2 weeks will become one of the most thoroughly documented cryptid cases in American history.
What?
Complete with official police reports, terrified witnesses, and a mystery that still lingers to this day. So, Chelsea?
Yeah?
We are going back to June 25th, 1973.
Okay, quick question. Is this him bowling?
Oh, yeah, that's that Big Muddy boy.
Okay, he's bowling, I think.
Yeah, I mean, he's got the thick thighs that I'm looking for.
Yeah.
Also, just brace yourself. This might be a Bigfoot episode.
Okay. But Deer Man was in it, so it's not fully... We can't commit it to a full episode.
Big Muddy Monster might be a Bigfoot. I'm just warning everybody at the start.
He does look like a Bigfoot, yeah. But I welcome him with open arms. I do. I'll accept him as he is.
We're going to start on June 25th, 1973, a humid Monday night in Murfreesboro, Illinois. Around 11 p.m., Randy Needham and Judy Johnson, two young locals, were parked near the Riverside Park boat dock, a secluded area along the Big Muddy River popular with couples looking for privacy. I'm sure they were just taking in the views, hoping to see some Deer Man dong or something like that.
Anyhow. Looking to lock eyes with the Deer Man.
Suddenly, their quiet evening was shattered by a loud rustling in the nearby woods. At first, they thought it might be a raccoon or a deer, but then something enormous emerged from the trees. According to their statements in the police report, the creature was at least 7 feet tall, possibly taller. Was covered in long, shavy, matted hair or off-white hair, soaked and streaked with mud.
Ew.
Its eyes glowed red in the darkness and emitted a stench so overpowering that both witnesses described it as sickening, a mix of rotting garbage and sulfur. The creature didn't make any vocal sounds, but it moved with purpose. Stepping toward the car, Needham and Johnson panicked. They sped away and drove straight to the Murfreesboro Police Department, visibly shaken and nearly incoherent with fear. Officer Nash and Officer Manwaring were dispatched to the scene. When they arrived, they found large, fresh footprints in the mud, approximately 10 to 12 inches long and deeply pressed into the ground, suggesting a creature of considerable height. The officers also noted a lingering odor in the air, describing it in their reports as strong and offensive. They reached the area with flashlights, but found no sign of the creature. However, the physical evidence, footprints, broken branches, and the pungent smell was enough to convince them that something unusual had occurred. Chief Toby Berger was notified and took the report seriously. He later stated that the witnesses appeared genuinely terrified and that their story remained consistent under questioning. The police report from that night is one of the most detailed in the entire Big Muddy Monster case, and it set the tone for the investigation that followed. The sighting wasn't just the beginning, it was the catalyst. It turned a quiet river town in the epicenter of one of the most documented cryptid investigations in US history. And it's still one of the most compelling accounts, not just because of what was seen, but because of how seriously it was taken by law enforcement. The next day, Chief Toby Berger launched a full-scale investigation. Officers returned to the scene with tracking dogs. According to the report, dogs picked up a scent but refused to follow it. Something about the trail terrified them. The detail was noted explicitly in the police documentation, adding credibility to the fear surrounding the creature. Now, around 10:30 p.m. that evening, June 26th, a call came in from Cheryl Ray, a resident near the park. She and her daughter had seen a large hairy creature moving through their backyard. Officer Nash and Manwaring were dispatched immediately. According to the police report filed that night, the woman described the creature as very tall, covered in white hair, and walking upright. She said it passed through her yard, heading towards the woods, and her daughter, who was visibly frightened, corroborated the sighting. Both described a terrible smell that lingered in the air after the creature disappeared. When officers arrived, they noted several physical signs, broken branches, disturbed underbrush, and a trail of large footprints leading away from the property. prints were similar to those found the night before. Deep impressions left roughly 10 to 12 inches long, spaced in a way that suggests a bipedal gait. The police report also mentions that the officers themselves detected the odor described by the witnesses. It was strong, acrid, and unlike anything they had encountered before. One officer compared it to a mix of sewage and wet dog, while another said it was enough to make you gag. Tracking dogs were brought in again, and once more they picked up the scent, but just like the previous night, they refused to follow it. The report notes that dogs whined and backed away, clearly disturbed by whatever they sensed in the woods. Chief Berger later commented that his second sighting, coming from a residential area and involving a child, added a new layer of concern. The consistency in the creature's description, its size, hair color, smell, and speed, matched the previous report almost exactly, and the physical evidence gave weight to the claim. In the early hours of June 27th, at 2 a.m., Officer Nash was patrolling near the Big Muddy River, close to the area of previous sightings. The night was quiet, humid, and heavy with tension. Murfreesboro had already seen two unsettling reports in as many days, and officers were on edge. While scanning the brush with his spotlight, Nash noticed movement, something large and fast darting through the undergrowth. He radioed for backup immediately, within minutes, Chief Toby Berger, Officer Manwaring, and several other officers arrived on the scene. According to the police report filed that morning, the team began a coordinated search of the wooded area near the river. They moved slowly, flashlights cutting through the dense foliage, weapons drawn not out of aggression but caution. The previous reports had described a creature that was massive, unpredictable, and foul-smelling. And then they found a trail of fresh footprints. These prints were similar to those documented on June 25th and 26th, approximately 10 to 12 inches long, deeply embedded in the soft ground, spaced in a way that suggested a bipedal gait. The officers also noted broken branches and disturbed vegetation consistent with something large moving through the area. But the most striking detail in the report was the smell. Once again, the officers described a strong, offensive odor lingering in the air like a warning. One officer compared it to rotting meat mixed with stagnant water. Another said it was unlike anything I've ever smelled in my career. Despite the physical evidence, the creature itself remained elusive. The team continued searching for over an hour, but the trail eventually went cold. The report notes that the terrain became too difficult to navigate and the visibility was limited. Still, the officers were convinced that something had passed through, something big, fast, and very real. Later that day, a local resident named Ray Miller contacted the police to report a sighting near his home. He described the creature as gorilla-like but taller, with long white hair and glowing eyes. Though his account wasn't filed as a formal report, it was added to the investigation notes and matched the previous descriptions almost perfectly. The third encounter marked a turning point in the investigation. It wasn't just isolated witnesses anymore, it was trained officers working through together, documenting physical evidence in real time. The consistency across all three reports, size, hair, color, odor, and behavior suggests a pattern, and the fear was no longer just among civilians. It had reached the rank of law enforcement. By now, the story had reached local newspapers, and they ran headlines like "Monster Sighted in Murfreesboro." Reporters from Chicago and St. Louis arrived. Riverside Park became a circus of monster hunters, skeptics, and curious families. And on the evening of July 7th, a group of local teenagers reported a new sighting near the Big Muddy River. According to the police reports filed that night, the teens had been walking along the riverbank when they saw something massive moving through the trees. They described it as huge, white, and fast, a blur of fur and motion that vanished into the woods almost as quickly as it appeared. The teens were visibly shaken when they contacted authorities. Officers responded promptly, arriving at the scene to investigate. The police report states that the area was thick with brush and difficult to navigate, but police officers did find physical signs consistent with previous encounters. Large footprints embedded in the soft ground, broken branches, and once again, the unmistakable stench. The odor was reported in the report as strong and offensive, similar to the description from June, a mix of rotting vegetation, sewage, and wet animal fur. Officers noted that the smell lingered in the air long after the creature had disappeared, suggesting it had passed through recently. What made the sighting particularly compelling was the consistency. The creature's size, speed, hair, color, and smell matched every previous report. and while the teens didn't get a close look at its face, they were adamant about its upright posture and the unnatural way it moved, fast, fluid, and silent. The police report also mentions that the officers attempted to follow the trail but lost it as the terrain became more difficult. No further physical evidence was recovered and the creature was not seen again. So, Chelsea, July 7th is the end of this. It marks the end of the documented encounters during the 1973 investigation. After that night, no new reports were filed and the Big Muddy Monster seemed to vanish as mysteriously as it had appeared. Huh. Now, there are some theories. Some believe it was an escaped exotic animal, perhaps a bear or ape. Others thought it was a prank or mass hysteria. Cryptozoologists proposed it could be a regional Bigfoot variant, and skeptics pointed to the lack of hard evidence, but believers held firm, citing the consistency of sightings and the genuine fear expressed by the witnesses.
Yeah.
Though the sightings taper off, the legend of Big Muddy Monster never died. Murfreesboro embraced its mysterious visitor. And the town now hosts an annual Big Muddy Monster Festival, celebrating the lore with costume storytelling and community events. What makes the Big Muddy Monster so compelling isn't just the creature, it's the atmosphere, the humid summer nights, the river mist, the small town backdrop, and it's the story that blends fear, mystery, and community. It's about a town responding to the unknown, not with panic, but with curiosity and folklore. And Chelsea, I find this guy super fascinating. And yes, you can actually go to the Murfreesboro Monster or the Big Muddy Monster Festival every year in Murfreesboro, Illinois.
I think they have a statue of him too. Yeah. Thank you, first off, for grounding my episode and how I started that. appreciated.
That's for sure.
This is exactly what this episode needed coming off of what I did. How cool is that sighting? I've never even heard of them, and that has to be one of the coolest ones. First of all, he's an albino Bigfoot.
I know. Except in the first sighting, it could be black or white. They didn't know for sure.
Well, he was so covered in fucking mud. Yeah. He was filthy.
He's big and muddy, so, yeah.
I'm going to say he was probably white in that one, too. And that would explain the glowing red eyes. He was albino. Now, what about, let's float a theory here that, okay, here's what I'm picking up on. Like, I think he seems like he's probably a Bigfoot. And the thing about Bigfoot is we did such a good episode on Bigfoot, like back when we first started. It's in the history books for Journey to the Fringe. That one was a good one. It's paranormal Bigfoot, and paranormal Bigfoot is not a guy that is... Should we call him different than a cryptid? Because I feel like a cryptid is something based in this reality. I feel like...
To the parameters of our reality, yeah.
Yeah, and I feel like paranormal Bigfoot, which I think is what Bigfoot is at his core. He's a paranormal dude. He is in and out of this reality, which would explain a lot in relation to this yeah. Bigfoot sighting, which you're not going to ever see someone who's a Bigfoot person ever fess up to that he's anything but...
Nor us on a Halloween episode, because there's a lot we can talk about within that, particularly the smells that always seem to come up with these creatures.
Yeah, but who doesn't have a smell every once in a while? And my other theory, yeah, sulfur particularly, and maybe, just maybe, this one I'm going to rank probably like third or fourth on my list of other possible things. Paranormal Bigfoot, number one. I'm pretty sure that's why he would never be seen again. He came into this reality, he checked it out, and he was like, nope. And that was that. The fourth, maybe two or three, he's in a freezer.
Oh, he could be in a freezer. That's fair.
Yeah, and hence why we haven't seen him a whole lot ever again.
Lured by that chili.
Yep.
Walmart chili.
Yeah. So those are my theories about where the albino Bigfoot went. He's rare. He's rare, more rare than a regular paranormal Bigfoot. And that was a beautiful episode.
Yes.
And good on the law enforcement. Good on them. If I was a police officer, I picture myself in all these different careers in this podcast. If I was a police officer, I feel like I would do that too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I would say... Hello, yes, it's 3 a.m. A Bigfoot sighting. I will stop at nothing. No
I
other
will be right no there. Other
crimes in this town will get in my way to to finding this Bigfoot.
But this flipped the sign over to closed on the police station and run out. And I would take the most detailed, beautiful notes you will have ever seen. And I would be paying attention to every detail. And they would say, unknown creature, and I would be like, say no more, that's probably Bigfoot.
We're busy.
I'm all in on this. Yeah, I'm really happy about that episode.
I'm glad, because I have been Taylor, here with Chelsea. We are Journey to the Fringe. Thank you all for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Journey to the Fringe. If you have liked what you have listened to, please like, share, subscribe, or follow, depending on what venue you are listening to us through. Also, please, if possible, leave a 5-star review, as that really helps us in the algorithms. Should you wish to interact with us, please check us out on your social media of choice. I bet you we are there. And if you really want to communicate with us and give us ideas for new episodes or tell us that we're wrong and terrible, either way, please send us an email at journeytothefringe@gmail.com. For now, I'll see you in the next episode.